Since we completed another three chapters of John's Gospel, last time I was here, I thought we would revert to 1 Samuel and pick up where we left off there. So our readings today are 1 Samuel and chapter 8, 1 Samuel chapter 8, and you find it, of course, on page 277. Not that you need the page numbers, you know where to find 1 Samuel, don't you? 1 Samuel chapter 8. When Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as judges for Israel. The name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second was Abijah, and they served at Beersheba. But his sons didn't walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. For all the elders of Israel, gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. They said to him, "You're old, and your sons don't walk in your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have." But when they said, "Give us a king to lead us," this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord told him, "Listen to all that the people are saying to you. It's not you they have rejected, but they've rejected me as their king, as they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods. So they are doing to you. Now listen to them, but warn them solemnly and let them know what the king who will reign over them will do." Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, "This is what the king who will reign over you will do. He will take your sons and make them serve you with his chariots and horses, and they will run in front of his chariots. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and others to plough his ground and reap his harvest, and still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants. Your men servants and maid servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. When that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, and the Lord will not answer you in that day." But the people refused to listen to Samuel. "No," they said, "we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles." When Samuel heard all that, the people said, he repeated it before the Lord. The Lord answered, "Listen to them and give them a king." Then Samuel said to the men of Israel, "Everyone go back to his town." Amen. Now there's been quite a gap between chapter 7 and chapter 8. If you can remember back to chapter 7, God's people had finally got themselves sorted, and they'd come back to God properly and repented and re-established a good, healthy, wholesome relationship with God in chapter 7. But there's a good number of years between chapter 7 and chapter 8, and as we all know, things don't always stay exactly the same. Circumstances change. And one of the circumstances that had changed was that Samuel had got old. That's how the chapter begins, isn't it? When Samuel grew old. Samuel had grown old. He'd got too old for the job. Now, it was a big job, because he wasn't just the spiritual leader of God's people, he was actually the political leader as well. He was the judge of the whole land. So it was a massive job. And it had just got to the point where he couldn't do it anymore. And good for him, he recognized that. Because not everybody recognizes that. And I was reading in your church prayer list today, prayer for people who are unable to recognize and accept age-linked deterioration of their senses and defer to take positive action to deal with it. Are we listening? You see, Samuel wasn't like that. He recognized that. He recognized that it was time to step down, to step back a bit at least. And he appointed his sons to take over. Now, as you'll see in a moment, that was a mistake. And I think really the focus of this whole chapter is a focus on mistakes. Mistakes that Samuel makes and mistakes that the people make. So we're going to be thinking today about mistakes. Do you ever make a mistake? Is there anybody here that never makes a mistake? We all make mistakes, and there's things we can learn today from this chapter about making mistakes, what mistakes to avoid, and the consequences of mistakes if we're foolish enough to insist on going ahead and making them. So we're going to be looking this morning particularly at various mistakes that they make in this chapter and that we might ourselves potentially make. Now, the first mistake is a focus on Samuel himself. The mistake that Samuel makes is that he messes up his priorities, and we need to be very careful not to mess up our priorities. As I said, Samuel was old. He could no longer cope with the responsibilities of being judge and being spiritual leader of all his people. And so he had decided to pass the responsibility for some of it on to his sons. He'd got too old for the job. Now, there are some ministers that get too old for the job, and they carry on in their churches when they're way past the age where they can cope. And it's daft, it's stupid, it's bad for the church. I retired the day I was 65 because I thought, I don't want to do that. I don't want to end up being a person that ruins a church because I want to stick to it. You have to accept when the time... Besides, I was exhausted. I didn't have the energy to cope with all these cantankerous people that you get in every church. I thought, I've got to get out of here. So Samuel, anyway, recognised his need to step back and to step down. But his mistake is that he appoints his sons in his place. Because as we read here, the sons didn't walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. So what was the mistake that he made? Well, I think we can understand it in two ways. Either he put his work before his family, or he put his family before his work. Now we'll think about that in a minute. Did he put work before his family? Was he so busy doing God's work, doing the work he was appointed to, that he neglected his sons? And they went their own way. And he didn't devote the kind of fatherly commitment that you would expect his sons. So they didn't grow up with his values. They didn't grow up like their father. We don't know if he did, if that's the case. It might have been that he put his work before his family. And that's a serious problem that every parent has to face, is how do you balance your work and your family? How do you get it right so you devote it right to it? So it might be that he put work before his family. Of course, it might be that he didn't. It might be that he was a perfectly good, devoted father. Because we all know parents who are lovely, devoted, committed parents who shower all the right kind of love on their kids, and their kids still go wrong, don't they? We know that. It can happen. And it might be that that happened in Samuel's case here. We don't know. But I rather suspect, since he was always gallivanting round all the villages every year doing his tour, that the boys probably got a bit neglected. And probably he was guilty of putting his emphasis too much on God's work and not giving a right balance to his family. But it might not be. It might be that he is actually putting family before God's work. And I think that's definitely true in this case, because he appoints his sons. Did he not know what they were like? Didn't he know they weren't up to scratch? Didn't he know they were doing these kind of things? He'd lived through Eli and Eli's sons, who were terrible. He'd seen it. He'd seen the consequences of that as he grew up. He saw what happens when a father doesn't see the things that bad sons are doing. And here he's doing the same. He's not seeing in his own sons the faults that he probably so easily saw in Eli's sons. But that's what we all do. We see the speck in other folks' eyes, as Jesus says, but we don't see the big log in our own. And so he puts his sons to head up God's work, because he loved his sons and he wanted to promote his sons. And that, of course, was a mistake. Now, the chapter begins, it says, when Samuel grew old. Can old people make mistakes? A few here today, old people. Not going to say what age you're old. I'm not going to do that one. That would be daft. Be in trouble. But there's probably a few old people here today. Are you immune from making mistakes? All the life experience you've got, surely you're not going to be making mistakes when you've got so much experience. We know fine, don't we? Old folks, young folks, middle-aged folks, male folks and female folks, whoever can make mistakes. We always need to be alert to that possibility. We need God's help to keep us from making unnecessary mistakes. So let's make sure our priorities are in order. That's the first question, the first mistake, that we get a right balance between God and family and work so that our lives are wholesome and right. Let's ask God's help to get that in place. And if we're going overboard on one or other, let's sort that. And if you see a friend going overboard on one or other, talk to them, sort them out, help them. Help us help each other get a right balance into each of our lives. Mistake one, number one, beware of messing up on your priorities. Now, it's when we turn to the people that we find that they make two mistakes. They're connected. Mistake number two is we have to beware of putting God in second place in our lives. God's people are unhappy, and understandably so. You don't want the leaders of your nation to be corrupt. You don't want them to be dishonest. You don't want them to take bribes. You don't want them to be touching women on their knees or all these other things that are emerging these days. We don't want that. We want men and women of integrity and honesty and uprightness to be our leaders, don't we? That's what we want. And that's not what they got. They found these boys were cheating and deceiving and taking money and being unjust. But the mistake they made was that they asked Samuel to appoint a king over them. They didn't say. What they should have said was, Look, get ready these boys and give us decent leaders who will support us and who will help us in our worship of you. Give us proper leaders. They didn't say that. They said, we want a king. And in asking for a king, they were making two mistakes. Hold off for the second one. We'll get there eventually. The first one was they were, to all intents and purposes, demoting God from first place to second place or even lower in their lives. Now, before we think of that, we need to see some of the consequences of this decision. For the first thing we find is when they asked for a king, Samuel is a bit upset. He takes it personally. He feels it's a personal rejection. And we have to understand anybody that takes on a position of leadership, be a minister and an elder or whatever in any church, is going to come under fire. They're going to be faced with opposition. It's guaranteed. And so here is Samuel being asked for a king, and he sees it as a personal attack, a personal rejection of him. Now, one of these days, hopefully, you're going to get a new minister here. So here's some things that you need to listen to. Because he's going to be your leader, or she, it might be a woman, of course. Whoever it is going to be a leader. The expectation of preachers. Here's a list of what is sometimes expected of preachers. If the pastor's hair is grey, he's too old. If he's young in appearance, he lacks experience. If he visits too much, he ought to be in his study. If he doesn't visit, he's lazy. If he visits only the poor, he's trying to get the recognition for being spiritual. If he visits only the wealthy, he's after their money. If he makes suggestions to improve the church, he's a dictator. If he's not, he's a figurehead. If he preaches an hour, is long-winded. If he preaches short sermons, he's lazy and doesn't study enough. If he fails to please everybody, he hurts the church. If he doesn't please everybody, he has no convictions. If he gets a large salary, he's getting too much. If he preaches on financial stewardship, he's only interested in money. In fact, whatever the pastor does, someone can always tell him how to do it better. Well, if you're a leader, or if you're looking forward to a leader, don't be the folks that are always pointing the finger, always accusing, always opposing. Be wise, be sensible. Poor old Samuel got it. You're past it. You're too old. We don't want you anymore. And he felt it personally. Somebody said the trouble with being a leader today is you can't be sure if people are following you or chasing you. How relevant is that to Theresa May? So if you're in a position of leadership, expect opposition. I used to say, I've told you this before, when I would go in from a Kirk session meetings in Storn and we're back in the house, I would say to Katie, take the daggers out my back, please. Because there was always something that wasn't right that you were doing, always something. Leadership can expect opposition. But what we need to understand that very often the opposition that is given to leaders in churches is in reality opposition to God. Samuel is hurt by this rejection, and God lovingly and carefully comes quickly along beside him and says, it's no you they're after. It's me. It's not you they're rejecting. It's me. They're rejecting. It's just they can't get at me, but they can get at you. It's the same when Paul was persecuting people and was tearing down the road to Damascus to persecute more Christians. When he meets the living Christ in that amazing encounter on the Damascus Road, Jesus doesn't say, "Why are you persecuting them?" He says, "Why are you persecuting me?" Paul couldn't persecute Jesus, but he could persecute the people that represented Jesus. And so very often, the opposition that God's people find, it's not opposition to them per se, it's opposition to God himself. And so God talks very carefully here to Samuel about this, and it's such a loving thing that he does. It's so lovely of God to come quickly beside this battered old faithful servant and say, "It's not you, it's me thereafter." And that is the crux of this decision. Because the crux of this decision was they were saying, "We're fed up of a God who is king, whom we cannot see. We want a king whom we can see." So in effect, they were demoting God from his top position as their king in their lives for a king that they could see, a human king. What a huge, huge mistake that was. And yet it's a mistake that many of us make. We commit to God, we commit to Jesus. Then as time goes by, he has less importance, less position in our lives. And before we know it, he's not seriously our king anymore. We've demoted him from the top place to further down the line. And that's a huge challenge. And we have to ask ourselves this morning, is God seriously our king? Is he the one we allow to rule in our lives? Is he the one that we obey? Do we follow his orders? Do we go where he wants us to go? Do what he wants us to do? On a lovely sunny morning, do you think, "Oh, it's a lovely day. I think I'll go a walk. I'll no bother with worship today." Or if it's a horrible wet day and the wind's battering on the window and you're under the duvet and it's awful nice and cosy, and you think, "Oh, I'll just stay here this morning." Or you've the dinner to cook and you're running late. So you just stay in, or whatever, isn't it? So easy in little ways to demote God, take him from that top priority place in our lives. Second big mistake then, we need to be aware of making God have second place in our lives. Now, in choosing a king, they were making a second mistake. They were demoting God to second place, but they were also choosing not to be different. We need to beware of not wanting to be different. Twice, they say, we want a king because we want to be like all the other nations. We don't want to be different anymore. We can't cope with that. We want to be the same as everybody else. Now, I don't think Jesus would have liked that. Jesus said, "You're the light of the world. You have to shine in the darkness. You have not to hide it under a bowl. You have to let who you are stick out and be seen and to shine. You have to be a peculiar people," doesn't the Bible in the old-fashioned sense say? We have to be different. We have to be distinctive. We have to be seen to be people that are changed by the power of God. Now, of course, the world is constantly pressurizing the church not to be different. Amber Rudd, the Home Secretary, recently said to the churches, you've got to go for gay marriage because that's what the world wants. You should do what the world wants. Well, do we have to do what the world wants? Surely we're supposed to be distinct, different. Surely we're supposed to show the world what God can do in our lives. And the church is constantly being pressurized into being the same as everybody else. And we need to guard so much against that. As the standards of God's word get eroded away with the constant nitpicking of the world into our lives. And the church sometimes compromises on that. There are those in the church, and particularly in the Church of Scotland, who say, we should move towards the world. If we do what the world wants, if we become like the world, we'll get close to them. No, it's not how it works, is it? We need to show that God, Jesus, makes a difference. We have to be distinctive and different. It doesn't mean to say you wear black clothes and have black faces to match going to church on Sunday. Of course not. But in who you are, in how you deal with life, in what attitudes you have, in what priorities you have in your life, in what words you allow to come out your mouth, in what things you allow your minds to think, in these ways, we can show that we are different. We are not saved by grace to look like everybody else. We are saved by grace to be distinct and different, to be lights in this world. So three mistakes this morning. Beware of messing up your priorities. Beware of putting God in second place in your life. Beware of wanting to be the same as everybody else. Now, should you decide, well, too bad, I'm still going to do one or two or three or all three of these things, what are the consequences if you choose to make these mistakes? Well, half the chapter is taken up with that. We're not going to spend half the time on it, but half the chapter is it, because God says to Samuel, just let them have their king, but warn them about what the consequences are. And so there are two warnings really given to us here, warnings of what will happen to us when we make mistakes. They're going to lose a great deal of their freedom. If they have a king, he's going to take their sons and he's going to make them soldiers, or he's going to make them slaves. He's going to take the daughters and he's going to make them slaves as well. And he's going to take 10% of everything they own, and not just 10%, but the best of everything they have. They've got to understand, if they choose a king, there's consequences. And the consequences is not going to be a better life. The consequence is going to be a harder life. You're going to lose so much by making this mistake. And so it is, we think, oh, well, if I don't follow God quite as much as before, I can do what I like, and I'll have freedom in my life, and it'll be grand. But it's not. When we get rid of God from that top place, we don't gain freedom. We gain slavery to our habits and to the bad things in our lives. It's absolutely crucial that we stick to keeping God on the throne of our lives. There are consequences every time we make one of these mistakes. And we need to face up to that. We need to see that very clearly. And what we also need to understand, a warning that's given us here, is that God sometimes allows us to make mistakes. That's exactly what happens. God does not resist this request. Right from the very beginning, when they say, give us a king, he says to Samuel, listen to them. Do what they say. Give them what they want. perhaps is saying, God is saying, they will learn from their own mistakes. Now, that's not a totally new thing. When Paul wrote to the Romans, he talked of exactly the same kind of thing. In Romans chapter 1, at verse 24, therefore God gave them over to their sinful desires of their hearts, to sexual impurity, for the degrading of their bodies with one another. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts, and so on. You see, they had chosen to exchange God for idols. And so God says, right, that's the choice. Give them over to it, and they'll learn from the consequences. And that's the pattern. That's exactly what's happening in this chapter, as God says two or three times to Samuel, listen to them. Give them what they want. They will discover from their own experience what this mistake has been in their lives. So the warnings are quite clear. If you choose to do any of these mistakes this morning, you'll suffer for it. It'll not be an easy thing. It will not be for a better life. And the day will come when perhaps you'll cry out to God to help you. And God says, I'll not be there in the chapter. I'll not be listening. You made your bed. You can lie in it for a while anyway. He wouldn't leave us there forever, but for a while. He might say, you've made your bed. Lie in it. So the challenge this morning, get your priorities right. God, family, work. How do you divide your time? How do you sort it? Not easy today, but we need to get a fair balance into our lives. Make sure God is your king. Do you really want one you can see rather than one who can do it? Make sure Jesus is your king. And make sure you're different. Not in what you look like, but in how you are as one of God's people. And if it means you're in the minority, and if it means folks point at you and criticize you, just say, ah, well, really God they're after, it's not me. Because that's the gist of what's saying here this morning. Amen.